Father, thanks for these words. I pray that as we hear these words that Jesus spoke, that you would help us to not just hear them with our ears, but hear them with our hearts. And I pray that in Jesus' name, amen. So a few thoughts about this passage. Jesus shifts the thinking. So at least six times in this teaching we call Sermon on the Mount, at least six times it says, you have heard it said, and then Jesus says, but I say. Okay, so isn't that interesting that at least six times Jesus is saying, this is what you thought, but this is what I say. And so he's shifting people's thinking. I find it fascinating. So what is he shifting? Well, he's actually quoting, or at least there's a footnote reference to Leviticus 19:18. And that says, do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against a fellow Israelite, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. I am Yahweh. So that's what the verse is from, right? And so Jesus, when he says, you heard it said, that's what he's referring to. Now, the religious leaders of the time of Jesus interpreted this as really only the people of Israel. And that's because it said, don't bear a grudge against your fellow Israelite. And so the way the religious leaders interpreted it was to say, well, that's only the people who basically you already like. Now, you may not like all the Israelites, but we're kind of the same family. And so that's how they interpret it. And so that's why Jesus is kind of shifting the thinking on this, is because he's not just saying treat your or love your fellow Israelites. The leaders at the time, the religious leaders, so the people who were kind of making the rules, they really wanted clarity. They wanted clarity on what was good and what was bad, what was right and what was wrong. And they wanted that to be so crystal clear that it would be possible for them to obey it. Now, that sounds like normal human nature, right? Don't you want things to be clear so you know what to do? Like when you're driving down the road in Saskatchewan in winter and there are no more lines anymore because the snow and the sand and it obliterated them and you don't know where to drive and it's a four-lane road. Yeah, nobody likes that. Everybody likes to have lines so you know where to go and where to not go. I think lines are also helpful in judging other people. So for example, if there's a really clear line that says you don't go here and somebody goes there, then you can judge them. And you can actually make yourself feel a little bit better because you didn't go there. So I don't know if you ever do this. I sometimes do when I'm driving and I try so hard to stay in my lane and I see somebody else driving out of their lane and I feel a little self-righteous. I feel like, well, I'm doing it right and they're doing it wrong and I get to judge them. So that was just a little confession. I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying it's just a thing. So when Jesus says, you've heard it said, and then he quotes something from the Old Testament, and then he says, but I say, you know, you could ask, well, is this Jesus actually challenging the Bible? Because remember, the only Bible they had at that time was the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament. And so you could say, well, is Jesus challenging the Bible? Is he actually saying the Bible is invalid? And actually, no, he's not. Jesus is very clear that entire book of scripture, all of the Hebrew Bible, all of what we call the Old Testament, that that's all actually really important. The challenge he brings is not that whether it's valid or not. He actually brings a question of interpretation. And what typically happens is people interpret the way that kind of works for them, and then they stick with that, and it's really hard to see other things. And so like me interpreting driving on the lines on the highway, you know, it's hard for me not to think that way. And years ago, I was teaching in India and I noticed something unique. They had really nice roads in India and they had really nice lines, just like here. But I noticed that people didn't pay much attention to the lines. And our driver would just weave back and forth and straddle lines and all over the place. And I kind of felt like, what is wrong with you people? And that's because I was bringing my lines focus, my clarity on what was good and what was bad. I was bringing that into that situation and it didn't really work that well. All right. So when we think about this, when we think Jesus says, here's what I say, then we wonder, well, what's the reason? Here's the reason. Jesus says, if you do what I say, then you will be acting as true children of your Father. That's the reason, to act as true children of the Father. So the implication is that people weren't acting like true children of the Father. Otherwise, he wouldn't have had to bring this teaching. But here's what true children of the Father did. They love and bless enemies, like Jesus did. Jesus says those are the true children of the Father, and they want to act like children of the Father. Are you feeling challenged yet? I mean, this is really challenging teaching, because I feel like I want to be a true child of the Father, of God, but I don't know if I always act like it. Jesus says that's how they act. So here's another really interesting thing. Last week in the teaching time, we heard about this idea of reward. Remember when Brian was talking about how if you do all your good deeds in front of people, then you get your reward, because they'll all say good job, and you won't get your reward in heaven. And we kind of scratch our heads and say, really, is it really about rewards? Well, there actually is a bit of a sense of that here too. There's a sense of reward. Jesus says, if you love only those who love you, what reward is there for that? Okay, so that's interesting. I guess reward is important, but maybe not reward for the wrong thing. So back to Facebook or social media. You know, you think about the whole idea of love, and love used to mean something. Now it's a heart, right? In fact, sometimes you can even use just I heart something, and that means you love it. And I was wondering how that affects our understanding of love, and how it's our understanding of love has actually become really trivial. Even to the point where, you know, you can like something and it almost absolves you of responsibility. Like if you like a really important thing on social media, then, well, okay, well, now I'm good. I'm okay. Well, that's so different than what Jesus is talking about. He's not talking about hearting something. Jesus doesn't say, heart your enemies. Okay, that would be silly. But so it makes us wonder, what in the world does this mean? And how could we actually think about it working in our lives? So while we're wondering that, Jesus says this strange thing. He says, even bad people love those who love them. Even bad people, nasty people like tax collectors and pagans. Now, fascinating, Jesus actually died for those people too. Jesus didn't just die for the people who were good. He actually died for the nasty people who he says here, the tax collectors and pagans. And you can kind of hear him saying it, at least I can. Or maybe I can hear the writer of the book of Matthew saying even tax collectors. Now, why is this significant? It's significant because Matthew was a tax collector. Matthew was one of these people who's the nasty persons that Jesus is talking about. And so when Matthew, you'll notice this in the book of Matthew, there's often pretty hard stuff about tax collectors. And that's partly because Matthew is one of those. And when you think about it, you think not only tax collectors, yeah, maybe they're sketchy people, but you also think this is someone Jesus chose to be one of his apostles. A tax collector, a nasty, bad person, an enemy. So that was Jesus' response to enemies. He actually chose one of these people to become one of his apostles. So it's easy for us to say, oh yeah, bad people like pagans and tax collectors, and we can make a long list. But what if Jesus said, even Mennonite brethren love those who love them? Now, all of a sudden, now, wait a minute, that's messing with us, right? Tax collectors and pagans, fine, but really? But he could have said that, and he would have been just as right as saying tax collectors and pagans. And so now that changes things, right? Because if even you and I are guilty of only loving our friends, only loving those who love us back, only loving those who are like us, then we're just like these people that Matthew and Jesus talks about in the Sermon on the Mount. So what's the ultimate love for enemies? Well, Jesus demonstrated it. He actually died for his enemies. And as he was being, as he was dying on the cross, he actually said, Father, forgive these people who are killing me. Forgive them. But they actually don't know what they're doing. Wow. Like I said, challenging teaching, huh? And probably you're feeling this. You're probably feeling, oh, this is impossible. So just in case we didn't get it, Jesus makes it even more obviously impossible. At the end of the passage, he says, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. So up to this point, you're feeling like, oh, okay, maybe I can love my enemy a little. Maybe I can do that. And then Jesus throws this final straw in, and that is, be perfect as God is perfect. And you suddenly realize, I can't do it. It's an impossible standard. If we were looking for something that we could accomplish, too bad, because it's not here. Like the rest of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus takes what might be achievable, driving in the lines, and he makes it impossible. He says, okay, so you don't murder, but if you're angry, then you just like murdering. And you feel like, oh, who can do that? Nobody can do that. So what do we do? And this is part of the challenge, is do we throw our hands in the air and say, there's no hope? There's no way we can be perfect like God is perfect? Is that the right answer? And I'm going to suggest no. That's not the right response to this passage. There's a different way to think about this. So if you've been around the gathering for a while, you've seen me talk about this, and I'm going to talk about it again. We're going to use a picture. So Joel, if you could put that first slide on the screen right now. So the first slide is a picture of a box, and you can see that inside the box is good and outside the box is bad. I tried to choose neutral colors. So the light blue is good, the greenish is bad. Well, this is kind of the way the religious leaders of the time of Jesus looked at life. They were constantly trying to figure out what is good and what is not good, what is bad. And they were so careful about it that they drew really, really good lines. They said, if you do this, it's bad. If you don't do this, it's okay. This is the stuff that Jesus challenged. Jesus actually challenged line drawing, because what happens is when you draw a box or any kind of thing you want that is about being good or bad or being right or wrong, you inevitably end up focusing on the lines. You're constantly asking yourself, is this okay or is this not okay? Am I in or am I out? You're constantly focusing on that. And that's exactly what was happening with religious leaders at the time of Jesus. And frankly, this is what has been happening in human nature ever since. We just fall into this. We all want clarity. What's okay? What's not okay? And Jesus is saying that's actually not the right way to look at it. So let's go to the next slide. I think this is actually what Jesus wants us to do. So there's still a sense of a box. Jesus didn't abandon right or wrong. He didn't at all. And in fact, he said the law is so important. But what he did was he made the standard so impossibly high that it becomes difficult to actually see the line. Kind of like Saskatchewan roads in winter. It becomes difficult to see the line. And instead, Jesus creates this impossible standard that if you follow it, forces you to actually turn toward him. So when you have a box with clear lines, you're constantly focusing on the lines. But when the lines become impossible, you have to focus to the center. And I think that's what Jesus is doing here. He's telling us the only way you can be perfect as God is perfect, the only way you can truly love your enemy, the only way is because of me, because of what I have done, because of the way that I made it possible for you to actually be perfect like the Father is perfect. That's the only way. And so the practical thing about this is when you look at the center, first of all, the edges actually become a little more blurry, right? So the leaders of the time of Jesus said, well, murder is bad, but anger, maybe that's okay. Well, Jesus said, no, even anger is bad. And so now Jesus has messed up the line completely. And instead, you have to focus on Jesus. And so what that looks like when you and I wonder about how to treat our enemies is it forces us to look at Jesus and say, how did Jesus treat his enemies? Remember how he treated them? He died for them. He chose them. He chose these unlikely people to be his apostles. And so that's what he's asking us to do with enemies. Now, I don't know about you, but this is really, really difficult. And the only way I can even start to think about this is to actually say, I can't do it. And then second, I need to find the way that Jesus thinks about enemies. And that includes people who I don't even know personally, but who I think are really rotten people who I'd just love to hate. and there are a lot, well, there are some of those for sure, maybe lots of them, that instead, I do what Jesus said, instead of cursing, I actually start to think about praying for them. I start to think about how possibly they might be someone Jesus died for. It's a completely different way of thinking. And that's true with the whole teaching of the Sermon on the Mount, I think. So Martin Lloyd-Jones, who's a fairly well-known writer and thinker and preacher and teacher, said this: "We must love our enemies for one reason only, not that we can ever redeem them or make anything of them, but that in this way we can display to them the love of God." So we don't love them so that we can redeem them or make anything of them. We actually love them so we can display the love of God to them. So a couple of questions to think about as we come to the end of our time together, or the end of my time. We're going to still celebrate communion. But I guess the first question is, which enemy does God want you to bless today? Notice I didn't say forgive. That's another whole thing. Jesus says bless, pray for. So which enemy does God want you to pray for today? And it's okay if you say, I know who that is, but I can't do it. They're just too terrible. I need to become more like Jesus before I can do that. That's okay. Second question is, what will it take for you and me to let go of our self-righteousness, mostly knowing where the lines are and condemning people who are outside of those lines? What's it going to take for us to do that? I think that's another big part of this understanding of trying to think about being perfect like God is perfect.